People Leading People is a podcast about the stuff that pops up when you lead people at work. Join Brennan McEachran, CEO of Soapbox, and me, Jillian Bora, customer experience at Soapbox, as we interview the people leaders that inspire us most.
Hey everyone, Jill and Brennan here from Soapbox. Welcome to People Leading People. Today we're chatting with Derek Marshall, CTO at FlightNetwork.com, the largest travel agency that is both owned and operated in Canada. Before landing at Flight Network, Derek spent time at various startups and enterprises, including Bitstrips, Clearfit, SynCaps, the CBC, and Rogers, growing high-performing technology teams and coaching them through the challenges of scale and cultural change. Welcome, Derek.
Nice to see you
guys. Nice to see you too.
Awesome. So we were just chatting. We went deep into a bunch of things, and I'd love to pull some of them out for the listeners. But maybe to, just quick to introduce, some of your trajectory. Do you want to, give us the highlights of some of what you've done in the past and how you got to CTO of FlightNetwork.com and how you got in the room?
So a bit of background on me. I started in new media at as it was called then at CBC, and I had come from a bit of a technical background working in 3D animation, and kind of quickly got thrust into helping scale that team from being like new media and in a corner to being the center of attention for the entire CBC and our audiences there. Lots of good technical challenges, many more people challenges, and took a lot of those learnings and helped grow a digital media division at Rogers Media. From there, a bunch of different startups that I got to help at who were at various stages of product delivery. Was super proud of the work we did at Bitstrips to help them transform into what is now Bitmoji.
Yeah,
seems to be the center of attention
inside
Snapchat. So super great and like really great people and team there. And on the side, looked at and had incubated my own startup on the side. Doing because I like to scratch my technical itch every now and again.
Yeah.
I have a family, and being precariously employed is not a good thing. So I rather than take that out full time, I had the opportunity to join FlightNetwork.com and as their CTO a few years ago, and nice good challenge to help them figure out how to continue their growth as we, started expanding into different countries around the world and different markets. So
awesome. So we're going to get back to Flight Network, but I want to kind of zoom to the start of your career where websites were considered new media and kind of a side project that you put some young kids on.
Yeah.
One of the things we were talking about earlier was, the CBC is a big place. And you were, a young, hungry problem solver. And we got into a little bit of talking about politics, and is politics a bad thing and a good thing? And you came up with this term, or I don't know if you came up with it, but you used this term, bureaucracy hacker. So what's a bureaucracy hacker?
So I think what we part of what we're saying is like, politics has a bad name.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, if you take a more of a philosophical view of it, it's all your working life is centered around getting people to agree and move forward on things. And so if taking a kind of a techie view of a large enterprise, I looked at it as I came to look at it as a kind of large machine to hack and debug. So, as some of my ideas and stuff they trained me on.
Yeah.
So they gave me the toolkit and the training and to learn how to actually achieve results. So, achieving results in a large enterprise, you have to learn how to hack the
hack the system, hack the machine, and you became kind of a brute forcer of getting things done.
I was able to get approvals on and moving projects forward that in some cases surprised people.
Right.
How quickly we could actually get results.
So much so that you said you ended up being the guy who got known for being able to get things done. You kind of became, that's how you first became a manager.
Yeah, I have called myself a bureaucracy hacker at so when I showed up at Rogers, they had been trying to the media team had been trying to negotiate with a supplier
mm-hmm.
called Akamai, who's like a leading web content delivery platform.
Yeah.
For, I think the negotiation had gone on for 18 months, and within like 2 months, we were able to cut through all the tape, get a deal done, and get
moving.
But
wow.
That took a lot of bureaucracy hacking.
So
that was extreme bureaucracy hacking.
You got. I think the interesting thing, and I don't know, we haven't gotten too deep into it, but the interesting thing is, unlike other hacking, which gets bug fixes and security patches and the technology changes, bureaucracy hacking probably doesn't change too much. What are the hacks you learned throughout? What are the hacks people should take home and use tomorrow?
So I'm starting to think I should make a bureaucracy hacking list, a top 10.
Yeah,
list.
Top 10.
Yeah,
let's do it right now. This is,
we'll write it for you.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So I don't currently have that, but a couple of the top things we talked about, you see the patterns that people who can get stuff done in companies, you see the patterns over time. So someone. Who I have a lot of respect for in our current team, who leads our project management group. He shows up to most meetings with food, and especially meetings where there's like he needs to develop urgency around getting things done.
Right,
and also often he will surprise people and delight them by dropping off a bottle of wine or like. I still have a little bottle of sake sitting on my desk because
nice.
He wanted a vacation approval.
See him for 2 months, but hey.
But and there was a negotiations program that I had been on early in my career, and the CBC was great for that because you had access to lots of training and support. And one of the key things for successful negotiations was like to build a personal relationship. The good tactic is to break bread with people and like have lunch,
mm-hmm.
share some food. It opens up, and you were saying it's a good sales tactic.
From a customer experience perspective, I mean, I have a lot of my whole history is working with clients and customers, and I always love when I have the opportunity to sit down and have a meal with them. It totally just changes the dynamic of the relationship, and you feel somehow just, now we're friends. Now we're friends who are trying to help each other out versus I'm the person, like, you're my client and I'm your whatever.
Yeah, I think developing that relationship goes a long way because we talked about this a little bit too, and my default pattern is to just inherently trust people. But we're weirdos, and a lot of people don't inherently trust everyone, and that trust is earned. And so, a learned thing for me was, I've got to earn the trust of people, and a great way to do that, sit down, catch up,
mm-hmm.
eat food,
yeah.
which to me is like, okay,
now,
weird,
it,
but
it's not a,
let's
it,
do it.
Yeah, and that's not a normal, for me, it's not a,
natural.
As a nerd, it's
yeah.
not a, it's not something I easily do, but you can force yourself. So generally that's something, maybe something else to be self-aware of. And actually, in general, you're going to be more successful leading people, the more
self-aware
you can become.
Yep.
But that's it. You have to recognize that that's a tough thing to do. And then, you have to actually go out of your way to start in many situations, recognize that you're feeling uncomfortable and therefore are probably stretching yourself and therefore are probably learning and then to be okay with that and then to, be able to kind of look in.
Yeah. I think the reflecting is key. One of the ones, that I'll throw in there that's been interesting. We talked about one, I think we'll do another podcast, but, one that's been interesting for me is just being vulnerable first. It really helps, build trust. So if you do want to get feedback out of someone, you do want to get, and part of that is being reflective enough on yourself to know what feedback you're currently working on within your own management skill, but to say, hey, here's something I'm trying to get better on. You know, what else do you think, you know, we could, you know.
So bureaucracy hack. So we've got break bread.
Yeah.
Be vulnerable. I think those are two good ones. And that'll help you build the trust that you need to move up. So what about building trust? So you've had an interesting trajectory with your career where, you know, sometimes you're building teams and sometimes you're inheriting teams. And I think a lot of our listeners would be interested to learn a little bit more about inheriting teams. And, you know, that's a huge exercise in building trust. So can you talk to us a little bit about your experience, kind of high level to start, of inheriting teams?
Yeah, so...
And maybe even break it up, too, because you've done the inheriting a team, but then you've also done coming in as an executive and inheriting a bigger team.
So I think maybe, like, for most of your listeners, it would be... Maybe there's probably two patterns that would probably be most common. One is getting promoted above your peers, your existing peers.
Yeah.
And then also going in, like, kind of from the sun. Someone said it before. It's like, I'm from the sun and I'm leading this team.
Here I am.
and there's probably it's different on both sides. So and you know I think it's like the main thing to do. And now I try to have as much discipline as I can as possible about like articulating and understanding what the objectives are. Like what needs to be accomplished by, like, why are these people here? Like, why are you all there?
Yeah.
And what does success truly look like? Like, and, you know, don't try and bite off the 12 months from now. Like, just in the very short term, especially with when you're dealing with a new group of people, you have a short window of time to prove to them that, you know, that you can actually help.
Yeah.
So being crystal clear on the goals, writing them down, talking to the team, and now I can only offer that advice because I should have been given it in previous lives, but you know
even walk through those experiences where you feel like you should have been. So what went wrong there? What happened?
And
how would you fix it? I guess if you're going to go back.
It's just like writing things down. It's, you know, I would say earlier in my career, and even to this day, I'd say like the one of the best skills you can develop is just writing and communicating crisply and clearly. As I was lucky to have a boss who, at the time, I was like, oh my God, I feel like my homework's getting marked. And he would tease me taking out his red pen and marking up what I'd written.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
But, you know, like that was also a good thing about being in the CBC, surrounded by people who are journalists. Like,
yeah.
They know how to write. And the best managers there can communicate like crazy.
Yeah.
The best lawyers that I've worked with over time know, like, are monster writers.
Yeah.
They can take a lot of information and distill it down and quickly, right? And get that message across. So anything you could do to develop that. And so I had people who were beating me with a stick about how I was communicating. And I find most of what I do these days is helping people articulate
their
what
thoughts.
It is they're trying to accomplish on paper. And
projects
and teams go off the rails when they don't have that articulation.
Yeah, and I'm guessing it also helps you build that trust. So if you could clearly articulate, okay, here's what my understanding of our goals are.
Yeah, and here's how you can help.
Yeah.
Like, is there anything in your way? So, like, you know, I guess another, like, a key theme in bureaucracy hacking would have to be removing roadblocks. But you can't remove the roadblocks
if you don't know what they are.
If you can't see them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't know which direction you're trying to go.
So what questions then do you use with your team to kind of understand, you know, what does success look like for them? What are they trying to accomplish? What are the roadblocks? What are your go-tos?
It's different in every organization and it changes over time. So it's not, I don't think there's like a template that you can use to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And like, I'll just go, like, you know, what I was saying at the beginning, I think if you're in the early days, it's a, you have to look very short term. How can you drive improvements and results?
Yeah.
So like figure out what the roadblocks are, like what's getting in the way. And that's why things like, you know, the practices that have come out of the whole, you know, agile project movement.
Yes.
That's how they help, because it's like you get those rituals in place where if you're listening
people say
they're blocked, and you can look at the patterns, and you're doing retrospectives and talking, you can find those things and try and make the, and figure out like what is in your control to help change and improve.
So things like, you know, the morning stand-ups, the
yeah.
one-on-ones,
yeah.
the project retrospectives, those
yeah.
are all.
And it's, yeah, making space as a manager too. I think we talked about when you first become a manager, it does become your job to make time and make space to make sure those things happen.
Yeah, well, it is your job.
It is
not,
your job.
But it can be...
That's precisely your job.
Yeah.
It can be...
It's hard the first time you do it.
You're going to screw it up all the time. And you're going to vary, like, you're going to have some people where, who will, like, and I have a list of people who would sing my praises, I'm sure. And I know there's many people I've let down over the years. So, you know, and I still feel bad about it and regret
learning the hard way.
But, you know, at least I try to not repeat. I try and find new mistakes to make with people.
Okay, great. So we've learned a lot of cool stuff. And now it's time for our favorite segment, the secret question, which I love so much. So if you want to, there are three cards in front of you. Pick one up. He's going to pick it up at random. He can't see the questions. If you could read the question out and then give us your best answer.
I'm terrified.
He picked number two.
What's the most important decision you've made as a leader? I'll give you the toughest decision that I've had to make a few times.
Okay.
Because it's a regular pattern that comes up for technical people.
Yeah.
And there's been several instances where you're kind of new to the team, and everyone hates the software they're working with.
Mm-hmm.
They all want to rewrite it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the worst idea in the world
mm-hmm.
to say yes to that. Like, it's just, if you're a technical leader, you're going to have that. So I would say the most important decisions as a CTO that I've been involved in have revolved around the what to do with the, you know, what gets
legacy.
Labeled the legacy
mm-hmm.
environment.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, it's the wrong way to look at the
mm-hmm.
question. You should be thinking like, it's the, how to, what's the best way to improve the
modernize
revenue?
It.
Well, what's the best way to improve the output of the revenue engine of the company?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what you should
Let's
be
reframe
focused on.
This
yeah.
question.
So, you know, I say the first times I was involved in that,
mm-hmm.
like completely screwed that up and watched it go sideways.
So is it because you said, oh, how? What would you like to change?
Yeah,
and then let them
we
go.
We need to rewrite that.
Yeah.
And
you were technical.
Not knowing
you
what
get
I was
it.
Doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
how much work was involved?
I didn't have those scars.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'll end up in an incredible pressure cooker. There's actually an amazing book called Soul of a New Machine. That's something I think everyone who works in technology should read
yeah.
because it's a war story of computer development from the 1970s. And everyone thinks their challenges these days are like new and hard. The guy who's at the center of that story is trying to get a 16-bit computer into market.
Right.
In time. And he actually goes through this whole process, and he builds an amazing team, and he finds the way to actually get something to, which is to how to adapt the existing 8-bit and just extend it.
To
it was like an incredible idea at the time. But if you read the whole book, there's tons of gems in there, including like how to actually do project management at scale and stuff. And so if I had read and understood that, I would have been able to
avoid
recognize the pattern in my, you know, that was in front of me. And so, you know, coming into Flight Network, which has like a 10-year history
yeah.
as a you know, I call it like an overgrown startup, then there's a lot of pressure to rewrite and rebuild systems. But you got to figure out like which one's going to, you have to make sure you're asking the right question and you're solving the right, the most valuable problems.
And so if you get someone in there that's adamant, right, you know, we talked about this too with inheriting teams. Sometimes you'll be competing with someone to inherit the team and you win out, or you come in from the sun and inherit the team. And this person might already have formed opinions, strongly formed opinions about
it. Oh, it's everywhere. Yeah.
So how do you handle that person?
Yeah. You have to talk to them about data, and you have to make them understand the right question to be asking.
Yeah.
And, but like time pressures and everything else kick in and you are more than likely not going to be, successful. It's very hard to get people to change their minds. And you have to find different ways to show results. I had variable amounts of success, but I still believe pretty strongly it's absolutely the right thing to do to make sure you're asking the right question and putting the energy into the right things.
Yeah.
And often the diagnosis of what's at the root is probably wrong. Like you're looking at the wrong bottleneck.
Yeah. Interesting.
So that you, as a technical leader, that's the biggest one that comes up.
Okay, so before we leave you, we want to just pass the mic over to Derek for his quick pitch.
Hey, thanks for listening. Flight Network, we have an exciting team to work on here in downtown Toronto now. We just moved it downtown from Oakville.
Oh,
we've got shiny new offices.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get to work on, you know, like most of our projects and customers are actually international. So, you know, we're dealing with payments in every currency you can imagine and flights and airlines from all over the planet. So, you know, it's pretty fun, challenging stuff. So, you know, check out our job board. And, you know, if anyone wants to reach out on LinkedIn, as long as you put in one of those little messages that explains, I'm happy to
add a note.
I accept, because otherwise then it's someone trying to sell
you
services
something
from India or Ukraine.
Yep, that happens.
So if you want to ask any questions or want some suggestions on books to read and stuff, I'm happy to chat.
Great. Well, awesome. We all heard my meeting minder come up, which means that we're almost out of time. Thanks for joining us, though. That was a really great chat.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
People Leading People is produced by Soapbox, an app that helps managers and employees work better together by giving them a place to manage their one-on-ones, team meetings, and company-wide discussions. Download it for free at soapboxhq.com/free. Special thanks to our editor, Joel North. If you liked what you heard today, do us a favor and give us 5 stars in the reviews. And if you're really feeling the love, leave a comment with a secret question you'd like us to ask in an upcoming episode.